Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
This weekend, the New York Times published a stunning expose shining light on the scores of migrant children currently working on our farms, our factories, and some of the most dangerous sites in our country.
Alone and exploited. That's the major New York Times investigation revealing migrant children as young as 12 years old working for major brands like Ben & Jerry's, Fruit of the Loom, Ford, General Motors, J. Crew, Walmart, Whole Foods, and Target. In a rapid response, the Biden administration's vowed to crack down on migrant child labor. We'll speak with Hannah Dreyer, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who traveled to Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Michigan, Minnesota, South Dakota, and Virginia for the story and spoke to more than 100 migrant child workers in 20 states. Then we look at how Brazil's new president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, could play a major role in peace talks to end the war in Ukraine.
My suggestion is that we form a group of countries that will sit at the table with Ukraine and Russia to try to find peace, to try to stop the war. Brazil will make an effort.
We'll go to the Brazilian capital to speak with Celso Amorim, Lula's foreign affairs advisor. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen made a surprise visit to the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv Monday, announcing the transfer of $1.25 billion in new economic aid to Ukraine.
As we mark 1 year since the beginning of this full-scale invasion, the message I bring you from President Biden is simple. America will stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes.
During her trip, Yellen also warned China it would face severe consequences if it provides material support to Russia in violation of U.S.-backed sanctions. On Monday, China criticized the United States for its role in the Ukraine war. A spokesperson for China's foreign ministry said, quote, while the United States has intensified its efforts to send weapons to one of the conflicting parties, resulting in endless wars, a new end in sight for peace, it has frequently spread false information about China's supply of weapons to Russia, unquote. Last week, China released a 12-point peace plan to end the war in Ukraine. In related news, the president of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, has arrived in China for a three-day state visit with U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken visiting Kazakhstan for meetings with top diplomats from Central Asian nations. In Turkey, at least one person died Monday when another earthquake shook Turkey's southeast region. 29 buildings collapsed in the tremor, which came 3 weeks after a devastating pair of quakes that killed over 50,000 people in Turkey and Syria. Over the weekend, the head of the World Food Program, Michael Beasley, described the situation in southern Turkey as apocalyptic. He said, quote, the scale of devastation here is truly incomprehensible, unquote. The Israeli human rights group B'Tselem has accused Benjamin Netanyahu's government of backing a pogrom in the West Bank town of Huwara. On Sunday night, Jewish settlers attacked the town, burning cars and homes and killing Sameh Aktash, a Palestinian man who'd recently returned from Turkey, where he volunteered to help after the earthquake. B'Tselem said, quote, the Jewish supremacist regime carried out a pogrom in the villages around Nablus yesterday. This isn't loss of control. This is exactly what Israeli control looks like. The settlers carry out the attack. The military secures it. The politicians back it. It's a synergy, B'Tselem said. The Israeli publication 972 magazine reports the Israeli military allowed the rampaging settlers to walk into Huwara, quote, on foot, while preventing journalists, medics and Palestinian aid workers from doing the same, unquote. According to The Washington Post, Israel has not yet arrested any settlers who took part in the violence. This is Nabil Abu Rudina, a spokesperson for the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas.
Undoubtedly, this is a war against the Palestinian people, an inclusive war that is backed by the Israeli government. These settlers' attacks are part of the policy of the government, in spite that some try to deny it. These crimes will not pass without penalty, and Israelis shall be held responsible for all that happens. And so does the military. And the American administration, who also backs this government, should stop all this violence and all these crimes. The Palestinian people shall not be defeated or back out, and we will chase after them in all the international platforms.
The settler attack in Huwara came hours after a Palestinian gunman shot dead two Israeli brothers from a nearby settlement. That shooting came 4 days after Israeli forces killed 11 Palestinians and injured 500 in a rare daytime raid of Nablus. In the latest violence in the West Bank, an Israeli-American named Ilan Ganelis was shot dead Monday while driving near Jericho. The Biden administration has vowed to crack down on the exploitation of migrant children working inside the United States. This comes just days after the New York Times published a shocking expose revealing how migrant children are working in gruesome and dangerous conditions at factories owned by many major brands, including Fruit of the Loom, Ford, General Motors, J.Crew, Walmart, Whole Foods, Target, and Ben and Jerry's. We'll speak to the New York Times reporter who broke the story after headlines. The Biden administration's announced manufacturers seeking federal subsidies to make computer chips will need to provide affordable child care for their workers. White House Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre outlined part of the plan Monday.
The need for child care to boost our workforce is undeniable. Part of the solution to that is that the Commerce Department is going to require companies seeking substantial CHIPS funding to submit a robust child care plan that reflects the needs of their workers, communities where they plan to build.
Advocates for student debt relief are rallying outside the Supreme Court today as justices hear arguments in a case that could determine whether the Biden administration can proceed with a plan to eliminate up to $20,000 in federal student loan debt for many borrowers. President Biden announced the plan in August, but it's been held up over legal challenges. In other Supreme Court news, justices agreed Monday to hear a case that could decide the fate of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was created by President Obama after the financial crisis. Rupert Murdoch, the owner of Fox News, has admitted under oath that many hosts on his network, quote, endorsed Donald Trump's false claims about the 2020 election. Murdoch also admitted it was wrong for Fox to keep interviewing pro-Trump conspiracy theorist Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow. But Murdoch suggested it was done for financial, not political reasons. Murdoch said, quote, it's not red or blue, it's green. Murdoch made the remarks in a deposition as part of a $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit filed by Dominion Voting Systems against Fox. In a new court filing, Dominion also revealed Murdoch had given Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, confidential information about Biden's campaign ads, along with debate strategy during the campaign. A warning, this next headline includes video that may be disturbing. Protesters gathered in Knoxville, Tennessee on Monday to demand justice for Lisa Edwards, a 60-year-old woman who died after suffering a stroke in the back of a Knoxville police patrol car. Edwards was arrested February 5th on trespassing charges after she refused to leave a local hospital following her discharge. At the time of her arrest, she was still wearing her hospital gown. Police body cam video shows she repeatedly told officers she needed medical care, saying, I'm going to have a stroke and I can't breathe.
Oh, my God.
You've been medically cleared, so let's get in.
My foot's wrong. I can't. You're going to break me.
Yes, ma'am. You're going to have to get in.
My ankle.
You You've been medically cleared, ma'am. This is not going to work. So we need you to help us.
Right.
You need to get in there.
At another point, Lisa Edwards can be heard telling the Knoxville police officers, quote, you guys are going to let me die. One officer can be heard dismissing her warning, saying, quote, it's all an act. Instead of bringing her back inside the hospital, officers placed her in the back of a patrol car where she became unresponsive. Eventually, she was brought back to the same hospital, Fort Sanders Regional Medical Center. She was then placed on life support and died the following day. In an interview on WVLT in Knoxville, her son decried the police treatment of his mother.
I can't even wrap my head around it. I just don't see how somebody could treat someone like that. Like they treat her like she's trash.
Mexican soldiers shot dead five unarmed men on Sunday in the town of Nuevo Laredo, across the border from Laredo, Texas, sparking angry protests. The men were reportedly returning home from a nightclub. The Nuevo Laredo Human Rights Committee said soldiers fired at least 20 shots at the men who were in a pickup truck. A sixth person in the truck was injured. Soldiers later fired shots to disperse local residents who began protesting at the scene of the shooting. In Ecuador, Eduardo Mendua, an Ayacofan indigenous leader who fought against oil extraction in the Amazon rainforest, was assassinated Sunday. He was a member of the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador. The group said Mendua was shot 12 times by two armed men wearing hoods while he was at his home garden in the town of Dereno. Mendua's murder is believed to be linked to the community's fight to block Ecuador's state-owned oil company, Petroecuador, from expanding its drilling in the region of Sucumbíos. Indigenous communities in the Ecuadorian Amazon have for decades dealt with the horrific health and environmental impacts of oil production. Over a decade ago, they won a lawsuit against Chevron over the spilling of billions of gallons of crude oil, which contaminated the water and soil and caused cancer rates among locals to skyrocket. About 15 climate activists chained themselves to the French finance ministry in Paris Monday in a protest demanding debt cancellation for countries in the global south and for wealthy, polluting nations to pay a climate debt. The activists, who wore red jumpsuits and masks, splattered fake blood on the walls of the French ministry.
We are chained up just like the countries which are most affected by global warming and are tied down by the debt they have to reimburse, which keeps them from putting money where they need it to protect themselves.
Meanwhile, in Norway, dozens of indigenous and climate activists chained themselves to the doors of Norway's energy ministry Monday to protest the placement of wind turbines on land traditionally used by the indigenous Sami reindeer herders. The protests continued today when activists blocked access to Norway's finance ministry. This is Sami musician and activist Ella Marie Hayata Isaken.
We are here to protest against the ongoing human rights violations against Fosen, where 151 wind turbines are on the land illegally. That's according to a high court decision. But they are there anyway, so we demand that they should be taken down and that indigenous people's rights should be respected.
In Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has reached a deal with the European Union on post-Brexit trade rules for Northern Ireland. Sunak said the deal will remove, quote, any sense of border in the Irish Sea, unquote. Speaking in Belfast, Sinn Féin Vice President Michelle O'Neill welcomed the deal.
Yeah, what I've said consistently throughout the whole of the Brexit debate is that the people here have been left in limbo, they've left with uncertainty. I'm hoping that today, because we're at the end of the negotiation, the deal is now done, I'm hoping that today all energy and efforts focus at home here to making politics work and actually getting around the executive table.
The U.S. Marshals Service has launched a new initiative to investigate missing and murdered indigenous persons. According to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, there are more than 4,200 unsolved cases of missing Native Americans. Under a new pilot program, the U.S. Marshals Service will team up with the Yurok tribe in Northern California to help address the crisis. And this week marks 50 years since the start of the American Indian Movement's 71-day occupation of the village of Wounded Knee on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. The occupation helped draw international attention to the plight of indigenous people within the borders of the United States. The U.S. government responded to the occupation with a full military siege that included armored personnel carriers, F-4 Phantom jets, U.S. Marshals, FBI, state and local law enforcement. During the occupation, two Sioux men were shot dead by federal agents, and a Black civil rights activist Ray Robinson went missing. The FBI confirmed in 2014 he'd been killed during the standoff. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, alone and exploited, we speak with the Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter who investigated the migrant children as young as 12 years old working for major brands like Ben & Jerry's, Fruit of the Loom, Ford, General Motors, J. Crew, Walmart, Whole Foods, and Target. Stay with us.
The question is how much of it? The answer is all of it. The question is how many for? The answer is all of us. The question is should debt exist? The answer is abolish it. We can do it if we do it as a union of borrowers.
If the question is student debt, then the answer is cancel it. Joe could do it with the movement of a pen or a pencil. It's just a fancy flick of the hand and then all of it vanishes. Then all my homies hoping to be parents get a fairer chance. I know y'all hear us in Hyderabad screaming let us catch our breath a bit. So if the question is could you shred the records of indebtedness, then the answer is just as simple as I said it is. Second question, should I get the pet? We can scatter you and smother you in costs that are uncovered by insurance when your hip is reconstructed. Student loans for studying the subject with substance. The ankle monitor mandated for being the plugger and internet starts to sputter. Late and you bury you under the interest, wasting your life indentured. 8 to 5 and then some, just to pad our pockets with the payments we invented. Breaking your resistance isn't an accident, it's exactly as it's intended.
Parker, a.k.a. Lingua Franca's The Whole Bank. For our viewers, we just premiered a new music video for the song shared with us by the Debt Collective as advocates for student debt relief rally outside the Supreme Court today during oral arguments challenging Biden's student loan cancellation plan. And this is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago, where it's Election Day. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at a shocking investigation by the New York Times exposing the forced labor of migrant children as young as 12 at factories across the United States. Over 100 unaccompanied migrant children, mostly from Central America, describe grueling and often dangerous working conditions, including having to use heavy machinery, being subjected to long hours and late-night shifts at facilities that manufacture products for major brands and retailers, such as Hearthside Food Solutions, the makers of Cheerios, Fruit of the Loom, Whole Foods, Target, Walmart, J.Crew, Frito-Lay, and Ben & Jerry's. Others were forced to work as cleaning staff at hotels, at slaughterhouses, construction sites, car factories owned by General Motors and Ford, in serious violation of child labor laws. At least a dozen migrant child workers have been killed on the job since 2017, according to the New York Times. The disturbing revelations prompted the Biden administration to announce Monday a wide initiative to crack down on the labor exploitation of migrant children. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre called the New York Times investigation heartbreaking.
At the president's direction, the Department of Labor and the Department of Health and Human Services announced new actions to crack down on child labor violations and ensure that sponsors of unaccompanied migrant children are vigorously, rigorously vetted. Child abuse, child labor is abuse, and it is unacceptable. Again, it is unacceptable. This administration has long been combating a surge in child exploitation, and today the Department of Labor and HHS announced that they will create a new interagency task force to combat child exploitation. They will also increase scrutiny of companies that do business with employers who violate child labor laws, mandate follow-up calls for unaccompanied migrant children who report safety concerns to the
HHS hotline and audit the sponsor vetting process for unaccompanied migrant children over the next 4 weeks.
The Labor Department has already launched an investigation into Hearthside Food Solutions, which produces and packages food for other major companies like General Mills, Frito-Lay, and Quaker Oats. Democracy Now! Reached out to Hearthside Food Solutions to invite a company spokesperson to join us on the program. They declined the request but sent us a statement to read on air. The statement reads in part, "We take the allegations in the article seriously, have committed to these immediate next steps. We've engaged in a renowned global advisory firm, an independent law firm, to conduct an independent review of Hearthside's employment practices, third-party employee engagements, plant safety protocols, and our standards of business conduct. Following the review, we're committed to enhancing our policies and practices in line with our advisors' recommendations," they said. For more, we're joined by two guests. Hannah Dreyer is the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at The New York Times, whose major investigation published Sunday on the front page is headlined, "Alone and Exploited, Migrant Children Work Brutal Jobs Across the U.S. Her follow-up piece published Monday headlined, "Biden Administration Plans Crackdown on Migrant Child Labor." She's joining us from here in New York. You traveled to Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Michigan, Minnesota, South Dakota, and Virginia for the story, speaking to more than 100 migrant child workers in 20 states, Hannah. Can you lay out the scope of this investigation, what you found, and were you shocked by the speed of the Biden administration's response and your evaluation of what that is?
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. I mean, when I started this reporting, I thought that we might find that some kids were working agricultural jobs, maybe dishwasher jobs. I never anticipated that we would find this scope of children working these really industrial, adult, dangerous jobs in all 50 states. So really what I discovered is, I think, a child labor scandal in this country. We have more and more kids coming over without their parents, and they're being released to situations where they have to pay their own rent, provide their own living expenses. They're under huge pressure to send money back home, and they're ending up in some of the most brutal jobs in this country. So I talked to kids outside of slaughterhouses when they were getting off their shifts at 7 in the morning. I talked to kids who were working as roofers at the top of buildings, kids who had gotten seriously injured. Like you say, we found many examples of kids who had died on these jobs. And it's in the supply chain of, you know, so many corporations. At the end of this reporting, I just felt like it was inescapable. Like, so many of the things that I personally consume, like Cheerios, have this labor somewhere in the supply chain. And yeah, I mean, the response was overwhelming. We were told that the Biden administration worked over the weekend, and Biden approved these changes like on Sunday afternoon, a day after the story ran. It's really gratifying. The people who I'm talking to believe that there's still a lot to be done, but some of these changes really do seem like they will start to address this problem.
And Hannah, in your investigation, how recent is this development? In other words, there was enormous pressure following the end of the Trump administration to remove unaccompanied minors from detention facilities. Is this a recent phenomena, or did this has this been building for years now?
This is something that I think has been building for maybe the past 10 years. And part of it has to do with the changing nature of the children who are crossing the border. 10 years ago, there were far fewer children, maybe 6,000 children a year. Now we're seeing 150,000 a year. And those children were often coming to reunite with their parents. So they would cross the border and be released to a parent who often would take care of them. Often that parent would have paid to have them brought up. And now what we're seeing is it's much more common for parents to be sending these children, and the children are under pressure to send back remittances. So the dynamic of who's coming has changed. And we've also seen a labor shortage. I've seen a couple dynamics that have sort of created a perfect storm for this phenomenon to really explode since 2021. And what the people who work with these kids out in the field are telling us is that they've seen this huge shift in the last 3 years. Middle schools, where every eighth grader in the last 3 years has started working. Federal investigators who used to focus on sex crimes and are now instead focusing on pulling 12 and 13-year-olds out of factory jobs. It's been sort of a slow shift, and then in the last 2 or 3 years, it's really rapid change.
And your story indicates that HHS Secretary Javier Becerra did put enormous pressure on other government agencies as well as his own agency to move the unaccompanied minors out of the detention facilities. How do you assess the role of Secretary Becerra?
You know, a lot of advocates, a lot of people in immigration world were really excited about Becerra and about the change that they thought might happen at HHS after the Biden administration took over. But what happened was there was this huge crunch at the border where all of a sudden children were sort of getting piled up in jails that are run by Customs and Border Protection because there wasn't enough capacity in the child welfare organization that's supposed to take care of these children. That's Health and Human Services. So there was suddenly all of this media attention to kids sleeping on the floor, sleeping under those silver space blankets. And what people inside HHS say is that Becerra started putting immense pressure on them to discharge these kids more quickly. So every day would start with a call, and the call would be, how many kids have been discharged from care today? How many kids are still there? And what people who work at all levels of that agency say is that created a situation where kids were being pushed out too quickly to people who weren't vetted. And a lot of people inside the agency told me, you know, he would always say, why can't we run this like an assembly line? We need to be more efficient. Henry Ford would never have gotten rich if he had run his assembly lines like this. And I was very skeptical. I mean, that's a really intense thing to say when you're talking about the most vulnerable children in this country. But somebody eventually leaked us a video of him sort of berating staff and saying that on tape. So I think he himself is probably under a lot of pressure, but there's a lot of disappointment within the agency and among immigration advocates about how that's been handled.
Hannah, I'd like to ask you about the children. If you could tell us some of their stories, that's really the heart of your story, as you talk about Christian, who works in a construction job instead of going to school, 14 years old, Carolina, who packages Cheerios at night in a factory. Talk about each of them and also how you found them. How difficult was it for you to find them?
I mean, these kids were not hard to find, and I think that's part of what you're seeing with these Department of Labor reforms. Inspectors just have not been looking for them in a proactive way. I went to different cities and towns, and usually the next day, I already was speaking to children who were working these illegal, exploitative jobs. I talked to Christian in southern Florida. He was living in a house full of other unaccompanied minors, other kids who'd come across the border without their parents. All of them were working full-time. None of them had gone to school. Christian had come when he was 12, 2 years ago, and immediately the next day started working full-time in construction. He told me that he doesn't know how to read, and he would like to learn English. He would like to learn how to read, but he can't go to school because he has a debt to pay off. He has to pay rent. And I went to a construction site and talked to him as he was putting the roof on a building. And he told me he had already fallen twice that year. He was working with power tools. He was just sort of balancing precariously on the edge as he was trying to bend some rebar. And, I mean, he's a child. It's not what he wants to be doing. But he was released to this situation, and there's just sort of no support there for him to get out of it. And in Michigan, I talked to a lot of children who were working in a factory packaging Cheerios. They also packaged Lucky Charms and Cheetos. And these were kids who were in school. I met them at school. And some of the kids I met at school told me, oh, yeah, we have to leave early now because we have to go to our factory job. And I was just shocked. But I went to this factory, and sure enough, there they were walking out after the shift. And this is a place where you're working with really industrial machinery. The machines have sliced off people's fingers. One woman who was doing this kind of work was pulled in by a hairnet and her scalp was ripped open. I mean, it's a serious adult kind of place to work. And these kids are balancing it with, you know, 7 days of school as well. So they're exhausted.
And tell us about Neri Katzal from Guatemala, how they met their sponsor. Again, these children are here legally. And then talk about the children who have died.
I mean, I think that's such an important point. These are not undocumented children. They're not children who snuck in and nobody ever found out about them, and now they're sort of living a subterranean life. These are children who turned themselves in at the border, usually asked for asylum, and were released to live with somebody who the government thought would protect them. The government can't release them unless they're sure that it's a trustworthy adult who is taking these kids on. And in some cases, they're being released to complete strangers. So in Neri's case, he met a man on Facebook when he was 13. The man said that if he wanted to come to the U.S., he would help him, he would let him go to school. And instead, Neri shows up, the man picks him up from the airport, and immediately hands him a list of debts that this kid now has. So he's charging him thousands of dollars for his journey to this country. He